you, motherfucker.
Yassi.
Let her head for the job that you want.
The butterfly emerging from the cocoon.
I'd explain it as more of a sort of gestalt entity, really.
It's a freaking bear.
And welcome to Double Dodge, episode 11, calling this one Jingle Balls. Dave, welcome.
Thank you, Campbell, and a Merry Christmas to you.
Yes, and a merry, happy, non-denominational Festivus to you too.
Thank you.
Yes, so this is our festive season episode. We thought, as a present to all the fans, we'd talk about some of the guilds that have, you know, got a bit of a present with season three. So we got on Mr. One Trenton Denison to talk about the union. And who else did we get on, Dave?
We had Tobias Ford, who narrowly missed out on qualifying for Worlds at the recent SteamyCon. He is a gun engineer player and has a good deal of insight into how they roll out.
Yeah, absolutely. He, well, I racked his brain a little bit about some of his, you know, tech with the NGs. I'm still a garbage NGs player, but I've at least got a little bit better idea on how to kind of roll them out, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that was a good chat.
It was. And I think we need to apologize to Alex Botts in advance. I'm not going to go into detail. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yes. So sorry, Alex. Have a listen, though. You'll love it.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you bring a loaded gun to a party and sometimes it goes off.
Just goes off. Just goes absolutely off.
Yeah.
And speaking of apologies, also we'd like to just apologize. The quality of the audio on this does come in and out. I think it's Trenton's large personality that just messes with the internet in Australia sometimes.
Yeah, our tubes aren't big enough to handle it.
So it does get a little bit fuzzy from time to time. Stick with it because there's actually an awesome chat and content in there about, you know, those two teams and just some other stuff. We did a bit of a recap talking about a little known fact about Trenton that he likes to enter painting competitions that no one else enters and win them.
Yeah. Seems like a solid strategy. We also had a chat with them both about denial style versus scoring style in Season 3. Just to kick on some stuff that's been on the forums lately and referencing, I guess, what the guys over on Strictly the Worst were talking about. So, I quite enjoyed that bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's always going to be an ongoing discussion. I don't think the result of Worlds, you know, seals it one way or the other. You know, it's definitely two distinct ways of playing the game. I mean, there's many ways of playing, but those two distinct that we saw come to the fore. And it's an interesting discussion. We'll obviously touch on that as we kind of go forward in the new year.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's get this underway, shall we?
Can I tell you a funny joke? But a bear walks into a bar and he says to the bartender, "I'd like a Bloody Mary." And the bartender goes, "Oh, mate, why the big pause?" And he goes, "'Cause I'm a bear."
Get out.
That's terrible.
Boo. Boo.
So we have on the line from Queensland, Trent Denison and Tobias Ford. Gentlemen, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
Live the dream, pals.
I'm having a great time. Thank you very much.
That's great. The level of sincerity is just touching, and it's particularly relevant this time of year, given the holiday seasons. It's upon us, and on that note, we have three questions for you. We're going to get right into it, and you know, take your turn answering. First question: have you been naughty or nice this year?
Well, I'll go first, Tobias, because I know what your answer is. I'm always nice, mate. I've never said a bad word about anyone, so I'm on track for a massive haul this year.
I've actually been extremely good, just out of character. No sledging, no just calling people shit cunts, none of that. Just pure gold.
Yep. I hear Santa looks upon that favourably. And that leads us nicely into the second question. What do you want from Santa?
Oh, you go first, Tobias.
Well, fuck, I was not prepared for that question. not to be working at fucking Chemist Warehouse anymore, that's for sure.
Oh, wow. Good Christmas present, Santa.
Yeah. In an age of unfettered capitalism, you're keeping it simple, man. I like that.
Sorry, can I just jump in and just say to Tobias, do you want to give us your creds there? Like, you know, we can pump it out to the Guild Ball community and see if we can get you a job elsewhere.
All right, I'm a trained and qualified OH&S field advisor. I have a degree in psychology and 10 years of oil and gas experience. So a little bit overqualified for my current role, you could say.
Yeah. Yeah, so you just like fucking with people's heads and then giving them the wrong meds or something?
No, no.
You stuck at the shelves.
Just mix it in the water. It's all good.
Yeah. For Christmas this year, I'd like to get a job at Chemist Warehouse.
For reals, that would be awesome. Though. You could talk Guild Ball all day long.
No, you're not going to be there, mate. You're leaving, remember?
Boom, we could trade. What's that thing Freaky Friday?
Yeah, done deal.
Which one of you is Jamie Lee Curtis?
I'll take that. She's a good sort. I'll get amongst that.
Wasn't there a rumor that she was, like, actually a guy? Didn't they go around?
Hermaphrodite, I think it was.
Hermaphrodite, right.
But in all seriousness, if you were Jamie Lee Curtis, I would just spend all day looking at my cans. It would be fantastic.
They are.
They are impressive. True Lies was a really good film.
Oh, she's fucking a really great film. Great film.
Yeah, I'm glad we could get together and talk about Jamie Lee Curtis's cans. third and final question. What would you give Alex Botts for Christmas?
Who?
Okay. Great answer, Tobias, but I will give him a Christmas joke, Alex. Alex Botts, what is the difference between jam and jelly? I was can't jelly my dick in your ass.
Merry Christmas, Alex.
Oh dear!
Thank you, gentlemen. That was all class.
It's for peace of mind. Who is Alex?
No one cares, mate.
just Google Alex Botts, and it's not the porn one. It's the other one.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. A bunch of bananas come up.
Yeah, he's got a thing for bananas. And that's in all seriousness, he does. It's I don't know what it is.
No, he's a host of one of those that shit podcasts, Tobias. No one likes him.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, he's prolific. You got to give him that much. All right. Well, did you want to tell us about SteamCon? You were both there. Did you want to regale us with your tales of adventure?
I've got three questions for you first.
Mm-hmm.
Question one: how filthy are you guys that you weren't at SteamCon?
Did you want to go first, Cam?
Yeah, very. I don't know how you answer that other than like all the spoilers and all the decent stuff came out and you just got to sit here on a drip feed through Twitter and all the other usual channels and just see you guys having fun. Yeah, that's fantastic. Thanks for that.
Good question. Other guy?
Yeah.
I was sad. I don't know, man. I'm kind all of right. Like on an even emotional keel these days. It kind of like goes up and down, but it's only minor. I would have liked to be there.
Well, SteamCon was the best event of this year, and I had a lot of cracking events. Let me just say that. So, yeah, you should be filthy that you missed it. It was amazing.
Man, okay. Well,
it was pretty legit.
Yeah, thanks for not rubbing it in. That's nice of you.
What was it like sitting at home watching us have an awesome time?
Well, I was flicking between the Twitch feed and porn, so, yeah, it was good. Like, All the right receptors in the brains were in the brain was going off. So,
what was it like? Literally waiting 4.5 hours for DC to figure out he's got steamroller.
That was brilliant.
You should have heard in the fucking viewing room. I was going ballistic.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully they they polish those edges off for next year or. Get somebody else to do it.
Tell you what, one of the other things that you guys really missed out on was the crossbow range.
They asked me to do it, but
that was a crossbow range.
That.
Yeah, I got what? To be ballista for a day. It was awesome.
Fuck, where was that?
Yeah. Oh, not at SteamCon.
No, Leeds Arm.
It's pretty cool,
but it was pretty awesome. So I hit the bullseye, five plus for days. Oh. So,
man. Yeah, okay, I'm properly filthy now. Well done.
Yeah.
What's your third question? Did you have three?
No, I just wanted to piss you off.
Well done. Mission accomplished. All right. Well, tell us about your highlights. Like, you know, I take it you didn't spend like fucking 3 days drinking.
All right. So SteamCon.
Yeah, SteamCon was incredible. Right from just getting there and just all the excitement. So for anyone who I suppose has traveled to a big con before, there's always this. When you're spending 30 odd hours on a plane, you're ramping yourself up on how amazing it's going to be. And I really found it delivered. The grounds were really cool. Like there was a cricket pitch in the middle, and all the rooms had this full glass viewing portal out onto the cricket ground. So that was awesome. And then getting to meet all the crew of Steamforged as well. That was really fun. Met DC and his wife. They were both really cool people. And saw John Damaris again, which was really, I really love that guy. And I spent a few weeks staying with him a few years ago at War Machine Weekend, so it was great to catch up again in England for Guild Ball, of all things. So that was good. Then the gaming room was massive as well. Just had heaps of good games. So, yeah, great time. It's awesome.
And you were playing in the Last Chance qualifier as well, right?
Yes, both of them, actually. I was able to get into both, which was really good, especially because I'd traveled halfway around the world, so that was good. But, yeah, the Friday, I'm not even going to bother talking about because it was terrible.
Yeah,
except, you lost round one.
Yeah.
It was rubbish.
Oh, dear.
What happened? Lost in a terrible way. It was Ballista into Fillet, and the game should have been easy as cake, but for whatever reason, the whole game just completely screwed up and ended up going down 12-0. So it was terrible. It was not the way I wanted to start the weekend off, mind you.
Then, but it was close.
Yeah. Look, it's one of those games close where
12-0 you've ever seen.
Anything could change, but it was 12-0. So
yeah, rough. Did you play through the rest of your games for that particular?
I did, actually. Like, I smashed out all the rest of my games, so sort of won the rest of them, like 12-2, 12-4. That sort of stuff, you know. So that one, I'm just blaming it on jet lag. Yeah, just get that out there right now. So.
But the second LCQ you played, we hear it was a close thing.
Yeah, the second one, like I continued my streak and just smashed everybody. All the games in the day two were basically top teners, I think. So
nice.
But then I got up to Steve Easton in the finals, who I'd absolutely wrecked on day one. But then we had a really close game, and he ended up winning 12-8. So it was good, but not the result I wanted.
So
he was not the hero that Gotham deserved.
Yeah, it's a real shame, man. Like, coming that close and just missing out on playing in Worlds. So. I mean, my God. Yeah. Yep. What about you, Trenton? How was your experience?
Yes. So my weekend started... traveling with Matt, with Steamy. We jumped in his car and drove up for the 3.5 hours up to Leeds together in a car and had all manner of good conversations. We stopped for some McDonald's on the way, a bit of Mickey D's, magic. Oh, magnificent. So we ended
How
up...
How is British McDonald's? Is it the same or different?
Exactly the same as everywhere else in the world, right, mate. So we arrived, and by the time we arrived, everything was set up, which was all part of Matt's magnificent plan. So pro straps from the steamer there. So we basically just rocked up to the venue. I think we went out for dinner that first night, didn't we, Tobias, with DC and...
We did to the Greek restaurant.
Yeah, the Greek restaurant.
The plate of...
vegetarian meat. Vegetarian meat dish, yeah.
So Trent was vegan the entire weekend. I'm just going to throw that out there, just in case anyone's listening. So.
Yeah, thank you. I wasn't really, but... I was trying.
Not really.
No, really, I was trying.
Are you meant to be vegan, or like, what's the deal there?
Oh, no, me and Toy are getting into a bit of veganism at home, so not eating much of the meat or at all. But on the weekend, I was just hammering as much meat as I possibly could. So, and you can use that as a soundbite if you want.
Thank you, mate. You're the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, yeah,
talk about Christmas.
So... It's just a shame Christmas only comes once a year. Look.
You're about to get married, mate. So, like...
Me too.
All right. Anyway, so yeah, day two. Look, I spent my whole weekend just bumming around. Hey, like I whenever I wanted to play a game, I could always find a game with someone. I think I played a game against JJ, smashed him. Played a game against Owen, Hobby Geek, smashed him. And I went to a lot of the seminars. I wanted to get involved in the seminars and stuff. So I was part of the Rat Catchers Guild seminar, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. We designed some cool characters for that. I then watched Russ's sculpting seminar, where he actually started sculpting Skulk. I watched the seminar where we actually created the rules for Skulk. And, yeah, so it wasn't until, I guess, the second one where Russ actually got pretty close to finishing Skulk off that the idea was tossed up for them to actually get it cast and brought over, which just absolutely blew my mind, right? But anyway, so
Best things of the whole con, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that they, like, 0 to 100, just a complete model with rules, with the sculpt, and I'm sure Sherwin's probably got fluff for him already as well. So
yeah,
awesome.
It was yeah, it was like nothing ever seen. But I spent the whole weekend chatting to Russ and Matt and Rich and that, and you know, talking about, I guess, the painting competition, and because I'd entered a few of my bits and bobs in there. And I
should be noted, I don't think anyone else entered a single thing into the painting competition.
Yeah, there was two other entries. There was like eight entries in total, and two of them weren't mine. So it was an absolute debacle, which is why
intimidated.
Anyway,
that's like going to the local pub and buying all the tickets for the meat tray raffle.
Yeah, no, what it was like doing is, mate, it's like going and playing rugby league against a bunch of 10-year-olds, right? I was just kneeing little fucking kids out of the way, right? Just pushing them off. it was not fair, mate.
That was the one thing I missed about SteamCon was not being able to, or rather, choosing not to go to the, like, all the seminars and the interesting bits. Next year, hopefully, I can do that. So that'll
be good. It was awesome. But were you at the Friday night
mixer?
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah,
it was the best.
They gave me a microphone, which was possibly the worst idea they could have ever come up with. And there was Rich and Matt and Perkins and Bryce and Alex all sitting up the front in front of, I don't know, 100 people. And I'm peppering them with questions, and I was just on fire. It's just lucky that they didn't have a recording or a microphone of that, because I was absolutely destroying them.
That's a shame. That's a shame. Well, even Jordan Knack said you did a good job, so you must have done.
I know. Well, yeah. From Jordan Knack, that's like basically saying I'm Gandhi, right? So it was pretty awesome.
I love the way your ego works, mate. It's like. Yeah, it's got quite the throttle on it.
Thank you. So, I basically got given the chance to paint Skulk on Saturday night. I didn't really... So obviously Worlds was on Sunday, right? And I knew after playing a couple of games on the weekend that I was in pretty good form, and I wasn't too stressed about you know, how I would go. I felt pretty confident. I had a good team. I didn't have much practice against morticians, which basically was like, I knew there was going to be at least four morticians there, but I couldn't find anyone that was a good player, especially not you, Scrub, to practice against.
Yeah, I'm not your guy.
Just like last time we played, I flogged you, so
yeah. That's the point. Did you want to like maybe go on a 5-minute sidebar about that? I don't know, man. It's not,
that was a good game. It was 12-2, mate. I absolutely wrecked you. Yeah. Anyway.
It's very close, though. Very close.
Yeah, it's a close game.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, I had the chance to paint Skulk, and I thought, you know, I'm never, ever going to get another chance to do this, right? So I stayed up till 2:30 a.m. Painting Skulk on the Saturday night, the night before Worlds. Hmm. And I have absolutely no regrets about that at all. it was an awesome experience. I got to chat to heaps of cool dudes that were coming around to check out the model and... Yeah, it was phenomenal. So the painter model was posted up, pictures of it on the forums and on their website and stuff. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then the Worlds was on Sunday. So I basically felt pretty confident against most people, I'd watch most of the people play. The only person who I thought was probably more consistently good player than me was probably Jordan, and so I drew him round one, which was good. It was a fun game for us. I don't think it would have been much fun for anyone else watching, because we actually just didn't talk. We both knew what the other one was doing, so there was just no need to talk. So, like, he would roll his dice, and I would just mark down momentous two before he sort of done anything, and I was like, yep. And then he would pick up the dice and roll again. It was just, the whole game was sort of like that. I had an opening to potentially get into the game, which was a snapshot. Gutter missed the three dice pass to miss. It was in range for a snapshot. I rolled the snapshot dice and I would have succeeded. And I still had miss to activate at that point with, was either three or two or three influence on him. So, and the way that he'd played the game, the majority of his team was down my side of the field. So unless he kicked off really well, there was a very good chance that my next activation miss would just be able to walk over and score and take me to 12. And at that point, he was on two. So, but I missed a snapshot, and that was pretty much all she wrote, and he comfortably got home from there.
So when he demolished Blackheart, like, because I think the biggest move he probably made that game was taking out Blackheart.
Putting Blackheart in the box?
Yeah.
And this is the thing, so a lot of people ask me about that. I legitimately didn't care about Blackheart going in the box. The more resources he was spending and grouping his models around there, the more opportunities it gave me to go for the ball.
Right.
The only way that I figured I was going to beat Morticians with my team, and the only way that I was going to beat Jordan, was to go balls deep and just go flinging goals at every opportunity. Very similar to the way that Tim beat him in the final, just have a crack at everything. And, for me, I missed a snapshot, didn't work out. For Tim, it did. So it's at that level, in a lot of cases, it does come down to luck. You don't often get players making mistakes at that level. Jordan didn't make a mistake. I was happy for him to kill Blackheart because I didn't really need Blackheart to be doing anything. I had missed. I had Decimate chasing the ball. And at that point, I knew I was going to be on 8 points, and all I needed was just a little bit more time to be able to score. But, yeah, so he killed Blackheart. By that point, the game was over, so it didn't really bother me.
Yeah, we all shed a sad tear when that happened. Yeah, it would have been great to see you guys play the final. I think other people have said that as well, but here's the way it is.
He's an awesome player, and despite what he sounds like on his podcast, he's actually a really lovely guy too. So don't always judge a person by their persona on podcasts or online.
Yeah, I had some good conversations with Jordan over the weekend, so it's quite interesting.
Wow. I'm going to blame all this niceness on the Christmas spirit that's in the air. This is the least amount of sledging I've ever heard come out of Trenton.
Oh, look, so I've got to tell you, Jordan loses his game, and 3 seconds later, 3 seconds later, Big Dano is just on his case. Like, I was just going, oh, man, so what's it feel like to lose a final? Like, with everyone watching, what's that feel like? Just absolutely on his case. Did not miss him.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well
it done. Didn't take long. Trent was really ready to induct him into the travelled overseas for a final and fucked it up club. So.
I was like, yes, finally someone knows how I feel. I'm going to sledge the shit out of him.
you missed your calling as a diplomat.
That was some of my best work too. We were after the thing. Jordan was just chomping at the bit to play some more Guild Ball for whatever reason. I would have gone and fucking cut my wrists and slept in a bathroom. But he was like, yeah, let's go play some more Guild Ball. And so we went to the Canadians room. Oh, the Canadians were good dudes, by the way, as well. Yeah. So
they were really good.
I couldn't remember the guy qualified's name. And it didn't really matter because he was shit anyway. So I just kept calling him. I just kept calling him Canada all weekend. So I was like, hey, Canada, what's going on? Anyway, so we went back to Canada's room, and John Damaris and Jordan playing a game. And the whole time I was just giving it to Jordan. It was fucking amazing. Absolutely gold.
Yeah? I mean, does he have emotions? Like, did he react?
Oh, no. I think I saw a single tear roll down his cheek at one point. That was about it.
The proverbial blood from a stone. That's nice.
He was...
Infinite like sadness.
A lot of people, I guess, have sort of forgotten the fact that he had a 75% chance to win the World Championships.
Yeah, that's right.
He had a two-dice goal. That's a 75% chance, and it didn't come up. So you know, as well as Tim played, and he did, he played awesome, and he made really good decisions, and it was an awesome sort of game to watch with the two contrasting styles of play. The simple fact is that Jordan probably had a fair and reasonable chance to win that game.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was a great game. There were a number of those moments where, you know, either one of them could have won it. I'm just glad everybody's still friends and alive.
One of the other games in the finals, I think, like someone needed 4 sixes or 5 sixes on a parting blow to
it was seven, I think. It's seven sixes, and he got on versus Hemlock, and he rolled seven sixes.
That was mad.
Yeah.
Yahtzee.
Yahtzee.
was that Tim Wisniewski?
I think it was Steve Easton. Yeah, I think he beat Steve Easton with that roll. Yeah, pretty full on.
Tim did that to Steve in the first round, I think. So it's just like, oh well, what do you know?
Hey, so what is happening? Ice is playing in the first season 3 tournament, right? The proper season 3 single individual tournament, and you are witnessing magic. All right, I just want to say this. So the finals finished up. There's about 35 people standing around watching Tobias's game, and he's playing Jack Newton, right? So Jack's very, very good player. Everyone rates him. You know,
he's
like
the
even they say.
Of field ball.
Yeah, even though he's like 4 years old, he's still an absolute weapon, right? So, anyway, Tobias is playing him, and I'm egging Tobias on. I'm like, Tobias, snapshot, fangtooth, snapshot. And so, literally, Tobias wins initiative on this last turn, and everyone's watching the game, and Tobias just looks at me and gives me just that quiet, gentle nod, just, oh yeah, this is about to happen. And Hemlock charges, steals the ball, and then punches and gets another momentum, and she's literally 4 inches away from goal, right? So she could take a snapshot, or she could take a four dice shot on goal, needing a three. And he passes the Fangtooth, and the crowd just goes, oh! So Tobias picks up his two dice, right? And he just rolls them without looking, and then turns around, doesn't look at the roll, and just raises his hands in the air and just starts fist pumping, right? And the whole crowd is going, what is happening? We're watching the dice tumble over. 5-5. Fangtooth snapshot.
That's brilliant.
And everyone is high-fiving like, oh my god, he just won with a snapshot with Fangtooth. The score was 10-2. He didn't realise it wasn't to win the game. I'm making him want to do a snapshot to not even win the game.
I think it was Jack pointed out, he's like, you're only on 10 points. It's like, oh, right, 10 points. So I guess we better play it out.
And I just do a lap to the room, high five everyone. Like,
Aussie.
Oh, it was amazing. That was literally the best game moment on the weekend. It was so good.
Well done. You're building your legend one snapshot at a time, Tobias. That's
I can't hit a 5-5 score with Ballista, but bang two snapshots all the way.
Yeah.
Just to quickly touch on last day before we head on to other shit. We went to the Armory, the Leeds Royal Armory, on the last day, the Monday before we flew home, with DC and Steamy and Tobias and myself. And I've actually been there before, which is one of the reasons why I was like, oh, we've really got to go. And it's like 5 stories of historical artifacts through all historical periods of warfare. And there's also a crossbow range, so we went and fired some crossbows.
It was.
Good. We had a great.
That was really amazing, except for when we got to the concierge desk and we were trying to check our bags in, and the lady at the desk was like, I'm sorry, but you cannot check your bags here because we're on a high threat level. And everyone's like, what the F? Because, like, so rather than having all these bags located securely in a safe area where you've got 7 guards all just eating donuts doing nothing, you want people running
Let's
around
let people
the
take the bags around with them.
Where they could just willy-nilly plant whatever they need to do wherever they want. So, but no, we're on a high threat level, so you just go about your business.
Yeah,
amazing.
We ended up parking all the bags in a coffee shop down the road, and he was like, "Yeah, whatever, no worries." Yeah,
sure.
No high threat level at the coffee shop. Yeah. Anyway, it was all good. So yeah, that was our SteamCon experience. I spent my whole time just exploring, meeting people, chatting away, making new friends, you know, painting models, just experiencing the very first ever SteamCon, and just basically spending time with my friends, and yeah, it was an incredible experience. Yeah, would nice. Recommend. 10 out of 10, would Steam Con again.
I think 5 out of 7. For me, that was one of the like the really important sort of reasons or justifications why I really wanted to go. Like, there's only going to be the very first Steam Con once, and so I really wanted to really experience this one in its you know, in all its glory. And I think it was a good choice. Like, I would absolutely go back and do it again.
And to give them credit where credit's due, you know, like, for a company that's only been around for, you know, a very short period of time, to run a convention was potentially a bit risky. And I think they had over 200 unique visitors, which is pretty awesome for, you know, a small company. And but the quality of the organization of the event was very high, you know, like a well-oiled machine. And it was such a good experience.
There was also there were all these little touches as well, which were really amazing. Like the SteamCon cards was just a really unexpected but unique sort of thank you, I guess, for going there.
Yeah.
So things like that, it was just really good. A lot of nice polish, especially for the first one. So
yeah, and I don't know if there's been enough talk about how impressive that feed actually is, because. It's not an easy thing to run a convention of any size or scale, and those guys made it look relatively easy. So big shout out to them. I think it was mostly Jamie, Jay Finnegan, Bryce, and whatever other scrubbers from Steamforge helped out. I don't know.
Yeah. Also, just on that, Bryce ran, I think, like both the LCQs and did an amazing job there, and was probably just going flat out for the whole 4 days. So that was really good too. Like, all the tournaments I thought were well run, and I certainly enjoyed playing in them all.
Yeah,
he actually also didn't have a beer or a drink all weekend, which is killing him. Someone
else
really,
some, really rare for a farmer.
Do you know if they're going to do the same thing with national championships as they did this year in terms of giving a ticket to the winner?
Wasn't discussed. I would hazard a guess and say yes. I think that they want to make that a part of their, I guess, business strategy, what they want to see from the game in terms of its growth. And they want it to have a level of prestige, that event. So I think they want the best players playing, irrespective of financial considerations. So, but that's not coming from any official source. I didn't have anyone say that to me on the weekend. That's just me speculating. So,
oh man, it was a great touch. I really liked the way that it built up, I guess, anticipation about the finals as well. It was a great way to do it.
Like Trent mentioned, this is sort of the first SteamCon, and they've only been around for a couple of years now. And to put it on the line and say we will fly you over, I think that's a big commitment and a big statement, and I think players especially appreciate that kind of effort from the company that they're endorsing. So I think that was a really bold but good move too, and you know, I just think it really increases the overall experience of SteamCon, and even for people viewing it from home, you know that you're going to get a massive final because they have the best 8 people for the jobs. So was really awesome.
Yeah, and the international flavor as well. You know, they've acknowledged that they want to make it a world game. They want to build their following in a whole bunch of different markets. And you know, it's largely Western at the moment, but I'd love to see it expand into kind of, you know, wherever else in the world. But yeah, like, amazing to sort of develop this global following and have all these dudes from different countries just, you know, backing their guy, essentially. I mean, our guy didn't get up in the end, which is, you know, it's because he's a shitlord, but whatever.
He's a shit cunt. Yeah. What a dickhead. Yeah, hey, sure. But in all seriousness, so the cool thing about SteamCon was the fact that I got to go and you didn't, so suck shit.
All right, well, that's great, yeah.
Hey, one thing we didn't get to do, and I really wish we did, I don't know if that was Dark Souls.
Team's event.
Well,
oh, or Dark Souls.
Yeah. Well, Tobias qualified for the whole round of the second chance qualifier.
Dano's stroking out.
I play that. Fuck Team's event. What am I doing?
You're pretty glitchy.
You're just lagging. I think what you're saying was that when round 4 happened, JJ and myself, who were part of the team with Trent, we were both undefeated at that point. And so rather than both drop out to play the team's event, we both played on. He ended up going down to Steve. I went through and then played in the finals, but But it would have been awesome to play the team's event as well. Because I think some scrubbers from America wanted instead.
You capitulated.
Yeah, Dark Souls would have been amazing. That would have been really interesting to play.
Yeah, I didn't get to play it. I'm a backer, but I haven't played it yet.
Right.
But, not to be. Mm. All right, let's go on.
Praise the sun.
Praise the sun. Finger butthole. I love Dark Souls, man. It's one of my favorite games. Yeah, so we wanted to talk to you guys about Union and Engineers in Season 3. Whether you've got any strong opinions given the game time you've put in so far. And like we figured, you know, Tobias, you're pretty heavily invested in Engineers and you've probably got a good point of view. Deno similarly invested in Union, so don't feel you need to restrict it to either one of you. But yeah, did you want to just spew forth your thoughts about each?
Go, Tobias, talk Engineers, I think.
I was just going to say, one of the things that with the Engineers in particular going into Season 3 is I think they've undergone this metamorphosis in a way that no other faction has. So the butterfly emerging from the cocoon, they are, you know, really in Season 3 they have like a feel that they're polished and they've come into their own identity, whereas in Season 1 and 2 they seem to lack that sort of panache or really something which made them. They were sort of trying to be football-y but didn't really do it as well as any of the dedicated teams, and they didn't really, you know, have anything, or like they were kind of lacking in a playstyle identity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think coming into Season 3 they've really picked that up, which is amazing. And on the flip side, it means that, well, for myself at least, I'm feeling like I'm having to relearn the faction to a degree, which is great too, but it does mean that you've kind of got to slog it up the hill again.
How are you finding the overall power level Season 3 versus Season 2? Like, what are the, I guess, the dot points or the key points that you've
Ballista's playbook is just insane. He is such a boss hog, and he gets heaps of work done, which is awesome. I really enjoy the changes on all of them, and I haven't actually got to play all the characters yet. There's so many little, like, nuance changes as well, like, things like, I mean, Pinvice going up to Defense 5 and picking up Reanimate and like little things like that, or just like big changes, like the Ratchet change was massive. The Hoist change is just like incredible with the true replication. I mean, that allows you to do so much tricksy stuff or comboing, which I guess a lot of other factions just don't really have access to. So, yeah.
Lost exchange too.
She just got hands down better. Yeah, the acrobatics change was something that in Season 1 and 2 they really missed. Like, they didn't really have a reliable way to get around unpredictable movement.
Yep.
or the Trump clone or any of those ways which let people sort of defensively dodge away. So picking up acrobatics, like, is a massive boost for them. Like, a lot more so than just, like, you look at it on paper and it's like, oh yeah, she makes a 2-inch dodge, but on the table, the ramifications of that are tremendous.
So. 2-inch dodge and unpredictable to make a tackle. Hoist can be the same. Yeah, lots of cool things.
And it's also the 2-inch dodge plus the tackle plus the close control, so you can steal it off them.
Yeah,
and then, you know, then they can't get it back off you. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, Hoist can steal the 2-inch dodge. Like, there's so much you can do. I was going to ask Tobias, you've obviously played a bit of them. Can you talk us through, like, what kind of 9 you're looking at the moment and what you do and don't like and interactions you do and don't like?
I can. I mean, to a degree. Like, I haven't played as many games as I would like because the tournament that we're supposed to have yesterday just didn't happen for some reason that is nothing at all related to poor organization.
You played a fair few games at StinkCon, don't forget, Tobias.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I like Ballista. One thing that I really like in Season 3 that I didn't think or previously didn't was Colossus. And he still gets a really bad rap online. But I just think, like, Singled Out and Unexpected Arrival, as well as sort of Stoic to a lesser degree, but those couple of things just make him massively awesome. And then especially when you throw in Ratchet being able to overclock him. So suddenly, like, Colossus, if you throw him with 3 charge onto him, he's basically got 5 influence. He's got Singled Out on 1. He's got Knockdown, Momentous Knockdown. So he's like, he's basically got almost the best parts of Avarice's playbook, which is really good. And then he's sort of got the Unexpected Arrival, so he can just bury people off the board if he needs to. He's tough. And if you put him in cover with a nest marker next to him, like any attack that your opponent's throwing at him is basically losing four dice automatically. And like that's something which you see a 2/2 guy and it's like, oh, well, he's really easy to deal with. But then when you look at that, and suddenly it's like, well, my attack 6 guy is now attack 2. That removes all those sort of high-end playbook stuff. So I think he's really interesting in that respect. And it lets you set up these really obnoxious offensive positions. And, I mean, Ballistic can even throw second wind onto him. You've got Ratchet with his tooled up and all the rest of that as well. So, yeah, Colossus is someone that I'm liking a lot in Season 3.
I can't remember, Tobias. Does this playbook have any dodge well, or dodges. Is he just pushes? I
think he's pushes, no, he's just he? Pushes. Yeah. But it's, yeah. Like, he's got a momentous knockdown push on 3, which is nice as well. And
yeah.
One of the other things, I guess, that happened in Season 3, a lot of the engineers, even though they don't have momentous damage anymore, their discrete damage packets have gone up. Like, Ballista's got a non-momentous 4 damage now. Hmm. And Ratchet had 3 as well, but Hoist has picked up a 3, like Mother's got a 2, so they can actually spit out a good amount of damage as well. I don't know, lots of really cool stuff. And I like Salvo, who I absolutely hated and despised and loathed in Season 1 and 2, and he never did anything good for me. I actually quite like him in Season 3.
I was just going to say, does he challenge a slot with Velocity because of his striker capabilities?
I'm not sure about that. I haven't had them both on the table at the same time yet.
Yep.
What I do feel is like if you have 2 strikers, because his kick went up from 3/6 to 3/8, which is a massive change because it obviously it's 2 extra inches, right?
Yep.
But then his character
wouldn't be happy with 2 extra inches.
Yeah, well, let's face it. Picking up like Flurry and Arrow to the Knee over Floored Bolt and Kick Bolt, like they were both good character plays, but the one dice just made them too unreliable. And like you felt like if you missed one, then basically your whole turn fell apart. And I feel by taking Salvo out of that space, you kind of give him a space which is much more like better for the engineers player, but also better for the opponents as well.
He's got a new lease on life.
Yeah.
No, so. I like it. I have done some tech and I just wanted to run this past you. So mm-hmm. you take Hoist, Ratchet and Pin Vice.
Yeah.
Hoist steals or true replicates Blast, puts it on Ratchet.
I'm just going to stop you there. Give Hoist Blasted Earth instead, because that way you don't need to use Pinvice's Heroic to get the double damage buff on him.
Oh, no, what I was trying to do was actually do get Pinvice to do her Heroic, make Ratchet Mechanica, put deletion on Ratchet.
Yes,
and then he can heroic himself to give himself a free charge with 4 on him. Mm. And if you've singled something out with Colossus, he basically does a momentous 4 on the 3 column.
And Hoist is obviously filled him up as well.
It's next activation, so you can't overclock yourself in your current activation.
Damn. So close, and that's why I'm an amateur engineers player.
Actually, that came up in the forums a couple of days ago, and someone else pointed that out, but yeah.
So barring that, though, we can still get 4 attacks at, you know, potentially momentous 4 on the 3, but I'm just clutching at straws.
That's true. I mean, the overclock like is another thing that in Season 1 and 2 was just so abysmally like useless. But now in Season 3, I mean, even overclocking Pinvice, that takes her up to like an 8 influence captain. And like her playbook's not as good as Ballista's, but she's no slouch. Like, and then if you tool her up as well, she's just, she can become pretty obscene pretty quickly, I think. So,
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I've been toying around with the engineers and trying to get into them. I've had games I've got absolutely towel a couple of times. Find if you. I've been trying to play a real football-style game with snapshots, and obviously with the permanent tap-in, I think if you can get one model in 4 inches off their goal, then it's just snapshot city. But I'm finding sometimes if they can see that coming, you might get 1 or 2 goals, but that closing out of the game is the real challenge, and that's probably
that's also where engineers have like the absolute tools for the job, right? I mean, Hoist, in that situation, if you just sit him there like within 4 inches of their goal. He's got the sturdy, he's got the tough hide, he's got the reanimate. He's got everything to really just piss your opponent off, but then still be able to kind of push dodge his way back in there or get back into the mix. So he's like ultra reliable as a turret. And even like Colossus, even though he can be knocked down relatively easily, he's got the stoic, so you can't just push him out of that sort of turret position.
Yeah, that's not a bad point. And then you could stand him up, you know, use two momentum, stand him up, then pass to him and get the snapshot.
And then, like, if you're crazy and you use veteran velocity, she can get the unpredictable going as well. And sort of, like, they just have three really good, reliable, you know, four dice kickers who can all get in there and sit in that position. Then if you have prime velocity or salvo just passing to them, or why would you bother? You've got mainspring with his 8-inch long bomb pass, or ratchet with his 10-inch doing the same. So you can like fabricate these snapshots out of thin air, and they're really hard to shut down, or your opponent has to be dicking around in their own goal zone, which basically gives Ballista and Salvo run of the board. So
yeah, absolutely. And then so Ballista's also got his own, you know, big range kick as well. So
exactly, and you can just force all these or poor decisions or certainly suboptimal decisions onto your opponent, and just try and dictate how they're going to play around your game rather than advancing their own game.
So basically what you're saying is I need to just practice more and play more. I'm just a shit player at the moment.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yes,
I mean,
that's exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
Hey, Tobias can say that about me, Trent, because he's actually beaten me.
Oh, please.
It was, no, Campbell, it was a close game. It was only 12-2 or something. It was close, though.
That was extremely close. I was being kind and I let you live the dream of like sighting blowing, you know, the entire team to death all in one activation. I think it was something like that.
Actually, you're probably right. You probably let me do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm kind of like that.
One of the other things I like about engineers is I think that their union lineup is all reasonably relevant as well. So there's probably a good case to be made for all the different people in there. Sort of touched on it before, but one of the things that they still don't lack is a high output of momentous damage. So Rage can kind of cater to that. Decimate, I think, still has a really good place in Pin Vice because of being able to second wind after the legendary and get out of dodge. But then also, having like 1,000 cuts as well. Harry the Hat, obviously. Yep. Is amazing in engineers, you know. So they're all interesting choices rather than just there is one. Average, you know, there can be only one sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So going on that, then, I mean, obviously, given the changes to obviously how many you can select in your roster, I've been looking at them, and a lot of teams, it's almost if they can take them, obviously everyone can have Avarice and Greed. For me, it's almost like do you take Harry or do you take Avarice and Greed kind of setup? Like, where do you sit on that? Both of you.
I like Harry is really interesting, and I like him a lot. And as I said before, I really like Decimate with Pin Vice just for the second wind utility. So I think she has a spot there. I like Rage, just again for the sheer amount of damage he puts out. So any of those three, I feel are very valid choices, and I would play any of them. And part of it comes down to how I feel on the day or what I would expect the field to be like. Like Rage obviously has some very, very bad matchups, which is where like Harry is almost Harry does the things that Rage doesn't do, if that makes sense. Like he's got the 2-inch reach, he's got the, you get passive momentum for taking damage rather than dealing it. Then he's got the aura, and he's just really solid himself.
Yeah, Harry's great with Pin Vice's legendary team. If you can,
right.
Yeah, you ping pong around all in there, getting momentum, bouncing around, getting movement. It's great fun.
I think this is probably one of the only places that you might still see Gutter in a team. I think Gutter's still got a lot of value for engineers. I feel like Rage used to be available to butchers, brewers, engineers, and morticians. And I feel like now he's really only available to engineers and morticians. You just won't see him in butchers and brewers anymore. Just you don't need that momentous damage anymore. So, but I can still definitely see him in engineers. But for me, the clear choice is Avarice and Greed. not because they're busted, but because they add the same sort of value as what Colossus brings, with an added goal threat of 26 inches, and yeah, lots of interesting plays that you can put on. Now, having said that, they're a risky choice. They're a choice that benefits a high skill player, but there's always risks with playing Avarice and Greed now.
Yeah.
The first thing, if your opponent can push Avarice and Greed apart before they've activated, that fucks them. It cuts down their options almost in half. And if your opponent isolates Greed by going for a goal, which can be hard to stop, and you can take Greed out, it's an easy 2 points, and he won't ever come back into the game. So yeah, it's still a choice, but for me, Avarice and Greed and Harry are the two standouts.
The interesting one I find with Avarice and Greed is the melee threat range, and I only discovered this the other night. Like, we all know what the goal scoring is, but to actually, so sometimes if a player you kick off to them or they sit back off you, then it's hard to get in and start that kind of momentum train, and you might want the guy that you've used to kick to go later with some momentum or have some options. And Avarice and Greed being able to do, if you load them up and do the sprint, drop, where they go, charge, you can actually get in right on their deployment line, or pretty much. I think that's almost a gotcha that a lot of people won't see. Is it like 17 or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, you certainly one attack, but it's an option, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you certainly don't expect that from Fangtooth on turn one, do you?
No.
No, exactly. If you can trigger a whole bunch of other things based on, generating a momentum for the heroic, because you're not getting that, auto home crowd on the first turn, then, potentially it's something you've got to keep
an eye on. Look, I think you've got lots of really interesting plays with them now. I think they're the thinking man's model now for me. If they're awesome.
Yeah, I scored a second activation goal last night with them. Have missed, retrieve the ball, pass to Avarice. Avarice picks up Greed, off they go. You can get to tap in range, no worries. Score a goal. It's like super reliable.
They're my favourite model in the new season.
Which is why also Compound is really nice.
Yes, Compound actually shuts that down hard.
So do you think with the goal scoring and the way the Steamforged have pushed the game a little bit, back towards a more of a scoring thing, will that bring some of the goalkeepers into play more?
It'll definitely... Compound, I think, was making every Alchemist and Engineers team in the nine anyway, and that certainly won't change. Tenderizer is probably a choice that makes... The problem with Tenderizer is you've got Ox and Fillet, who are both legitimate captains and use very similar players. So you can actually build a two-team list into a Butcher's team, whereas you struggle to do that with, Engineers a little bit, I think. So whereas, Compound, you can have him on the bench as a tool that you need in certain matchups. Tenderizer is almost difficult to find a spot for in the nine because he's so specialized and doesn't fit into what they normally want to do.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about him anyway.
Wasn't there like
some... Seems like
kind
he
of...
wants to just
Sorry,
hang
Thomas.
Back and the rest of the Butchers just want to go forwards, so... Kind of splits your team up a lot.
Wasn't there like this extensive shit post on Facebook about this? Like,
somebody was saying Tenderizer's shit, and that's fine. Like, I actually spoke to Jamie about this on the weekend because I was like, mate, fucking Tenderizer, why would you ever play him? And some people want to play Tenderizer. Some people like that, the five goal and the counter charge and stuff, and it gives you a sort of a denial game. You play him and Truffles, and not many people have cottoned onto this, but if you play Tenderizer, Truffles and one other small base model, you can actually cover the goal. So with Tenderizer, you actually go to a target number six for a goal, so you can't see the goal. So
seems pretty good. It's situational, but
not terrible for Tenderizer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about a model that's going for a goal from 8 inches away, and they're covering over, going over one model, all of a sudden a three dice or a two dice kick needing a six is a lot more uninteresting prospect.
I think engineers can do that as well, but I think you're having to play veteran velocity at that point, and I just think you don't really want to be doing that when basic velocity is such a good option.
Yeah.
I actually don't mind veteran velocity. I know she gets a bad rap. She's just not bad. She's just not a bad option. I just think she's one of those jack of all trades in a game where you need to be a specialist to be able to really
succeed. To shine. Yeah. Played her a few times, but I just found that rather than kind of achieving anything meaningful, she just sort of, I don't know, she doesn't really achieve, you know, anything that another player I felt couldn't have sort of done or done similarly in the same scenario. Yeah. But I guess there's always the time when...
Anyway, Scrub wants to go onto uni. He's sick of talking about engineers.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about engineers.
No, I just think we've covered it. There's probably time to jump on something
Flog
else.
That horse.
Yeah.
Flog that horse.
Mm. Yeah, so Trenton.
Union. Yo, what's doing? Union. Super fun. Really great team in Season 3. You've now got that actual legitimate spread between a captain that is a goal-scoring captain versus a captain that is a fighting captain. And although it's actually probably fair to say that Blackheart's an all-rounder as opposed to a goal-scoring captain. But it's a lot clearer now that if you play Blackheart, your goal-scoring is as important as your hitting power, whereas Rage is an excellent support captain that has incredible damage. The changes across the board in Union are just phenomenal. You know, you've got the obviously Avarice and Greed and Harry, which are now pretty much first players picked in, you know, most of my Union teams. Mix has been taken down a notch. Minx, who is a phenomenal player. Gutter, who's still extremely good. Decimate, still extremely good. You struggle to pick a team of six, put it that way. It's a dynamic team. It's fun to play. Union in Season 3 are just fucking awesome.
So I jumped on pretty much at the start of Season 3, and I've been playing Blackheart mostly. Man, that guy is just fun to play with. It feels like you're driving a Ferrari or something. He's so fast. Comes from downtown.
Fast, momentous damage. He's incredible.
Picking up the momentous double dodge one, I think, was really good for him as well.
It's huge. It lets you, you know, get anywhere from wherever you start. Oh, man, I really love him. I'm playing the shit out of him at the moment, but I haven't played much Vet Rage. And I know like, Knack and Alex and Pat, they are big on Vet Rage, mainly because they think he provides the best kind of kill-slash-denial style available. I mean, do you have a view on that?
Look, I think Vet Rage is awesome. He's certainly... The two very, very minor changes that he's received have actually had a huge impact on what he does. So right now, he's probably ever so slightly in front in terms of who is the better captain out of the two, Blackheart and Rage. I think because he provides a more consistent game plan. I tend to agree with their assessment of the two captains. I think that Rage is a slightly more reliable captain who will get better results more frequently. But I think Blackheart has a lot more dynamic play style and has a lot of incredible tools. And as you scale as a player, your potential for Blackheart scales along with it. I mean, I scored a goal the other day with him. It was an 8-point activation. Greed started the turn with the ball, and Blackheart activated first, killed two players that I'd previously knocked down. Before he killed me, used On My Mark to get Greed to pass door. It was just mad dog stuff. So I'm a big fan of new Blackheart. And when you add new Harry, man, fuck, On My Mark is just printing money.
It On My Mark really lets you park your ball on a safe pair of hands, you know, just to retrieve it and think about.
I tell you what it does. Is it actually gives Snakeskin a very, very legitimate position in the Blackheart team. She is, without fail, the best ball holder in the game because she can nimble and clone. So she's defense 6 and clone, basically, against the majority of players. So she can almost get away from anyone that's trying to take the ball from her, and Blackheart can get it a pass. Yeah. So you can put the ball on her and no one can get it, and then you can have it whenever you want.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Mm. I mean, but like they're not lacking options in terms of good ball holders. Like Mist is good, Greed is good. You know, there's just so many options to set up that On My Mark play. And then you've got Harry that just gives you free movement.
I tend to disagree. Because I think Greed is not a great counter attacker, and he is vulnerable as a general rule as a ball holder. Mist is okay, but Mist still always had the problem of if someone, you know, hits them and you can't double dodge away, the double dodge is never going to happen. Mist is a bad option. But Snakeskin with Clone, you literally don't have to do anything and she can just avoid it, and she starts at the same defense as they do generally. I think I'm underselling Snakeskin there, but
she can even shadow like out when, if she has to activate. to get away even more, which is great as well.
Sales of snakeskin will go up
through the roof.
A lot of people really forget how good snakeskin is because they don't play her. You know, there's this perceived opinion that she's absolutely rubbish, and in all serious fact that she didn't change. Steamforged obviously think that there's nothing wrong with her, so you know, there's someone's wrong, and it's either us or Steamforged. Tend to think it's us.
Speaking of good changes, how good is bloody Coin now?
Wow. Oh, yeah. What a player, Blackheart.
Massively what good change. Fucking
player. Yeah, I've had so much fun playing Union. I'm planning on switching over to Butchers and
playing your 8 momentum strongbox charge.
But it has just been an dude. So I played Jared, your mate, on Vassal the other night. Campbell was watching some of the game, I was 8-0 down, or 8-2.
8-2, because so you hadn't actually done anything, but he'd witnessed me.
So, and Campbell, I reckon he was just sitting back thinking, oh, fuck, mate, this game's over, right in his head. But I still had a few things on the go, and all of a sudden, before he realised, in one turn, I'd killed Midas, I'd killed Avarice, and I'd killed Harry, and it was 8-all, and I had the ball, and it was a great comeback. But
I was just going to say, sorry, you could see the strength of how the Blackheart team was basically slowly taking over that middle part of the board, and so even though he'd got the goal and the witness me, you could see him crumbling, and as you've kind of come through the middle, I think he came in with Minx from one side and smashed him, and then Strongbox was just sitting in the middle printing momentum, like it was so good.
Oh yeah. Strongbox is. I said this to Jared. I think Strongbox is. It's been a reversal, right? You've got Strongbox and Rage, who are probably just ever so slightly better than Blackheart and Coin now. Strongbox is fucking amazing. Couple of things. He's a two kick, right? So you can actually reliably pass dodge. And when you've got Harry, a pass dodge is just. It's not even a thing, right? You don't lose anything out of your team. So passing the ball to Strongbox on the first turn, dodging him forward for free thanks to Harry, you get him upfield. And as soon as Strongbox is upfield, shit starts to happen, and like I cannot even explain how hard he is to kill. Like you look at him on paper and you think, oh yeah, 2-2, whatever, 8 health, no problems. But he's got tough hide, you know, he's got a knockdown on one. He's just on one. He's just a really
it's one or two cool. And he's only 2-column playbook, and then if you get sick him, it's
awesome. Yeah, and that's what I've done. Anytime I've got Strongbox, I take sick him. And you get these charges off with him, and you think, oh, it's all right. But you put Butchery down on the target. If the target's knocked down, they're engaged once or twice. He's getting 4 or 5 wraps that does 6 to 8 damage. And if you've got a player low enough and he kills them, it's like fucking 8 momentum from one attack. It's magnificent. Strongbox. I love him. Mm. Brilliant. Yeah, so, now look, I'm having a lot of fun with Union. I think they've got that really fun balance of scoring versus fighting. You've got enough players that you can play both options in a fully focused team where you can split the difference, and they're just really solid all round fun team. So. Yeah,
and you get access to all the Union players you want. That's the thing that I like.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really nice too now because of the Union change, or the one person Union per roster, their faction identity sort of strengthens a bit because they're not so ubiquitous across the field, and I think that's nice for Union as well, even just aesthetically, if not performance wise as well.
How are you liking Minx, Trent?
I preferred Gutter in season 2 over Minx, contrary to popular opinion, but in season 3 I'm actually still not sold. She's obviously improved, like there's no one that would be able to argue that she hasn't got better. But her weakness for me was always her vulnerability. Those 2 points of health don't seem like much, but they actually are pretty significant. It's the difference often between, you know, a moderately good player taking you out versus a moderately good player leaving you alive on 2 health. You know, let's you've got a tooled up or a whatever, a player goes in with a momentous 2 on 2 hits with TAC 5, you know, your average is 12 damage versus a 4-1 player. So she's actually just that tiny bit vulnerable, and that hasn't changed. So whilst Snared and Screeching Banshee and Back to the Shadows are all absolutely phenomenal bonuses and advantages to have in the game, it's still something where I find her sliding in and out of my teams. She doesn't make every team I play.
So that's interesting for the hunters in particular, because, I mean, I think everybody looked at Minx and went, all right, well, this is the natural fit, but I feel like Avarice and Greed are probably the better fit in a hunter's team.
Well, as I said, I think Avarice and Greed are a high-skill cap player, and Union hunters are a high-skill cap team as well. So I tend to agree that Avarice and Greed are probably a better fit for me. But Minx is good. Like she's look, I'm definitely not saying Minx is bad. She is phenomenal. But I just don't think that she delivers enough consistently. Like Furious is incredibly powerful rule if you've got the ability to use it. And although she's really, really fast, if she gets locked down, her efficacy drops dramatically. So when you've got a player who shut down and easily killed, those are two things that I do not enjoy in a player. I think Avarice Greed is probably better. Or even Hemlock still, probably better.
Yeah, Avarice and Greed, man. Like, they're probably my standout player for Season 3. I really, really like them.
I love how they've gone from, like, being in every list to still being in every list for different reasons.
Yeah, it's a bummer, actually, that that's happened. I mean, it's cool, because they're still my favourite models, as I said, but yeah, it's a shame that they went from being in every list to still being in every list, but for completely different reasons.
Yeah. Well, I guess the season's still early as well, and, you know, you've already talked about Countertech, and things will probably change over the course of the season. Well, it's probably a good point to jump into a different subject. We want to pick your brains about the difference between a denial or kill style approach to the game versus goal scoring approaches in Season 3, which seems to be, you know, a very strong option. Do you have any sort of general views about this, and how valid do you feel maintaining a control style or a denial style into Season 3 now is?
Why don't you go first, Tobias?
I feel that in this game in particular, someone who is trying to kill the ball or hide the ball eventually will come up against a team who can aggressively take the ball and just punish them for that. And there are some teams that are probably better than others at, you know, trying to play defensively or trying to shut the ball out of the game. But I think at the higher end, the teams who can then take it back and put it to work are going to overcome that. Also, I feel that the ball and scoring in particular gives you so many advantages that you're kind of remiss if you don't take advantage of that and use it. Like, the ball gives you, I guess, good board position. It gives you the extra influence. And it just puts you closer to the finish line as well. Yeah, and especially because in Season 3, I think one of the design goals or one of the version goals was to mitigate the impact of the first activation kind of slaughterhouse, where you could just go in and execute a player straight off the bat. And I think that plays more into keeping the ball alive and sort of playing aggressively to score to win rather than defensively to grind out the game.
I mean, your preferred style is more goal-oriented anyway. Is that fair?
In Season 3, I'm not sure, but in Season 2, I think I was probably averaging 4-1 in most games. So and I tend to... See, I guess this is the oxymoron, or the weird thing is because I probably play engineers in quite a controlling way, but I always look to put the ball to work in doing so, or when the game's going my way, I guess, or when I'm achieving what I'm trying to achieve, I suppose. So
one of the stated concerns I've noticed is that by scoring goals... you know, you're reliant on dice, but also you're giving away the resource that is the ball.
Sure, but you're also, anything in this game is dice related, so I don't think that's a valid argument. Like a 4-dice goal or a 5-dice goal is like as close to likely as you're probably going to get.
Similar. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, like the player has the opportunity to set the board to their advantage going into the goal. So if you score your goal, your opponent has a limited number of options for where they're going to kick the ball out. And by playing to that, you can position your pieces to then sort of attack or limit their options in how they spit the ball out. So like it's kind of a dance in some respects, and if you've got the right moves, then you're going to be all over your opponent.
I think that's the most sensible counterpoint I've heard so far. That's a really good point.
Certainly if you've got someone like Salvo who can just snap the ball up from 6 inches.
Well, I think whether you need Salvo or not, even without Salvo opening wherever they kick.
Just start again, Trenton. You're glitching out a bit.
He's gone. Yeah. Great podcasting here.
Yeah, my Skype's been going so shit tonight, hey?
Yeah, it's been rugged,
Moopsie's face pops up on Skype there.
Moopsie. What were you going to say, Trent?
I was just going to say, like, Salvo's awesome, but even without Salvo, like, any player can be set up to get the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's sort of, yeah, it's... I'm actually moving more towards 2-2 the more I play the game, and I've been trying to play games to where I go for 3-goal, and the resource advantage that you get out of scoring for me outweighs the lack of possession, because you know it's a game that is built on resource management, and that resource is influence and momentum, and it's a very simple correlation between the more influence you have, the more momentum you generate. The more momentum you have and the more influence you have, the more you can spend on things that facilitate you further in the game, not to mention the scoreboard pressure that scoring a goal puts on. You know, like, you look at that game between Tim and Jordan, you know, before sort of Jordan was able to really get into the game, he was eight down, and that puts incredible pressure, because he has to be absolutely pinpoint with taking the ball out of the game, and if he doesn't do that right, he could lose. And but even if he does do it right, he's got five players playing against six, so you know there's a lot more, I believe, to be said for taking a goal and constantly chasing the ball for goals from a resource perspective, and those resources being influence, momentum, and board position, and I guess scoreboard pressure.
Always. Also, in sort of furthering that as well, like, you're putting board pressure onto your opponent too. Like, if you're sitting there trying to hide the ball, then you're sort of like, you're not forcing pressure onto your opponent by doing that, I don't think. Whereas if you're hunting the ball, then your opponent has to, you know, they have to be aware of that, and then they're trying to back off or get out of that trap. So I just think sort of hunting the ball or sort of putting pressure on them and on their board state gives you a lot more options than being the one who's being imposed upon.
Mm. So. And potentially
it's reactive and proactive,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
And they may be using resources then to kill the ball, which they'd otherwise be using to generate momentum, so you can push them backwards in that regard. Mm.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also not just like we're talking about sort of board position, but it's also clock position as well. So, like, if you have to think a lot about if you need to be down to the millimeter about how the positions that you can defend the ball or keep the ball out of the opponent's threat this turn, then that's requiring a lot more mental exertion, or it can do, I suppose, rather than chasing it. So maybe that's just good clock discipline either way.
At worst case, when you generate momentum, so that's the worst case scenario.
Yep.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more depth to this game still to be explored, and I think Season 3 with Tapien and Home Crowd has opened up some of the very minor issues that I had with the game previously, which is the value of first turn, and I think that's another reason why goal scoring has increased in value, because the value of the winning the initiative role is less relevant. A double dodge or a tackle back or a... You know, being able to score first activation without needing to do anything else, those advantages are things that you can leverage in the goal scoring race that you couldn't before. And obviously, Tapien it makes it so much more reliable.
I like what it's opened up in terms of the home crowd, where if you think down the line of being able to secure the ball for an activation at the start of the next turn, knowing that you're going to get win the momentum race, that you can actually choose to go second, new to one of their activations, and then score a goal because you've already got the momentum. You know, it opens up things like that where you can play a bit cagier and actually, instead of having to do the charge with a model, trying to roll whatever, your dice may go well, they might not. You might not get the double dodge to bounce off and, shoot, whereas this way you can basically walk in your sprint, shoot, goal if you know you can put the ball in a position that it can't be retrieved that first activation.
Yeah, but then, like, on top of that,
I've actually taken second in a lot of games.
Yeah.
Because if your opponent then makes a defensive move to try and head you off, you don't have to take that goal straight away. You can then punish them for that, for ceding that positional...
Absolutely.
...as well. So it just... Yeah, gives you heaps of options. It's really good, I think.
One thing I've noticed is that having permanent home crowd makes 2-inch melee even better, you know, into 1-inch melee. You know, like you can set up these activations where, like, Blackheart in particular does this really well. They kick out the ball to a model that, you know, is a 1-inch melee, and he just goes in there and takes it off and scores again. Like, it makes the value of a hypermobile model with 2-inch melee, you know, even greater.
I've said for a long time, 2-inch melee is the strongest rule in the game, so nothing's changed.
All right. You guys have any closing thoughts as we count down to Christmas here?
Yes, I have a closing thought. And is it Phil or Bill? I can never remember. But so in retrospect, Bill wasn't wrong. He was just ahead of his time.
About what? What's the context here?
The Minx Gutter.
I had a massive argument with him about Minx Gutter in season 2, where he was like, Minx is better than Gutter, and I was like, you are just a fucking idiot, mate. There is no universe where that is correct. And then season 3 comes out, and Minx is probably now better than Gutter, and he's like, yeah, see, I told you. Fuck off. Mate.
Yeah.
Fuck
off. Parallel universe.
My closing thought.
Yep, go.
I am very, very excited to be playing season 3. I think it is an absolutely fantastic time. I'm extremely excited about what the future prospects hold. I think Brain Pan and Memory, Hag, Veteranox, all just look absolutely fucking amazing. The new plot cards, the new captains, the new players. It's all happening. It's such a good time to be playing right now.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd second that. It is season 3 is absolutely fantastic and such a joy to play.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your time, for your insight, for your Christmas cheer.
You're all good blokes in my book.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you for having me, and Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Balls deep. Merry Christmas.
Balls deep. Balls deep. Every day.
Balls deep. Balls.
Welcome back. That was, the audio was a bit of a shit show, but that was some pretty good chatter with those two blokes, top two decent players in Australia. And, it was a good bit of content for the punters.
Yeah, it's always nice to contrast Trenton as the self-proclaimed czar of Australian Guild Ball with Tobias, who is equally skilled but far more humble.
Yes, absolutely.
Both having like huge insight into how to play. I really love both those dudes. Don't tell him I said that, man.
No, absolutely not. No, his ego might get bigger and the internet might explode in Australia. So yeah,
that's how you get the Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters.
Brilliant tech, brilliant.
Yep.
So, have you got any shout-outs before we kind of wrap this one up?
Yep. So I think we should give our first shout out to our good friend Daryl from Nerdvana Games, who has sponsored us throughout this exercise. It's been a fun year, and he is a great dude. He is sponsoring CanCon as well, one of the sponsors.
Oh, is that right?
He is. So support him if you can, because he gives a lot of love to the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, to be honest, like, jump on there, his site. You know, it's not just Guild Ball stuff. I've picked up a few other bits and pieces that he has got on there. You know, he's got a lot of other games. So yeah, have a look, see what he's got in stock. He's a dude, drops it off at your house.
Love him. How about you, Cam?
I thought a bit of a shout out to Phil and Bill and Phil from Guild Ball Tonight. We got a bit of a mention on their cast. They're absolute dudes when it comes to the community. They put in a lot of work. I slogged my way through the 5 hours of content when they did the review of season 3. It was actually really, really good content talking to Jamie P. So shout out to those blokes. Maybe we can hook up and do a, you know, simulcast from the moon or something with those guys at some point.
Sure, sure. I love their recent discovery of palmies. They call them palmies, but, you know.
Palmos, yeah.
We call them palmies down here.
Yeah.
There's a sense of wonder, isn't there, which seems really appropriate at Christmas.
Yeah, I like it.
I think I wanted to give like a big thank you to everybody who we've talked to throughout the course of the, you know, like it's not always easy to tee up these chats with people who live in far-flung places across the world, and we really appreciate them making the time and also like giving their insight and sharing it with everybody else who listens to the cast. Like, it's all about growing a community, and we really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It speaks volumes of the community, I think, when people are willing to, you know, lay their time down at all kind of weird times of the day too, because obviously the time differences will get people who get up really early to jump on the cast, and, you know, people will stay up late. So, yeah, massive shout out to all those guys. It's been really helpful. And it's just, you know, something that we obviously started mid this year and something that we thought we'd enjoy, and we're just having an absolute ball doing it, so...
Yeah, it's been awesome, man. Like, so many cool people, great games that we've had. Like, I guess the next stop for us is CanCon, so we'll go play, you know, in that tournament and see if we don't do better than we did at Nationals.
Yes. Yeah, two scrubs going to CanCon. Brilliant.
Yeah, so, that's the next stop.
Well, we'll probably do a bit of a shout-out for that. That's on the 28th of Jan, Capital Cup in Canberra, CanCon. So book your tickets. I think they want to get a lot of people confirmed. There's been a bit of back and forth at the moment, but just get in and book so that Matt can basically lock in how many people he's got. And I, on a wider note, like, I say that for any tournament, it helps the people organising it. If you just get your shit together and basically lock in and pay your money so that they can at least organise it and, you know, cater for the event.
And I think we've got to send a special Christmas shout out to our good friend Tim Wisniewski, Drunken yes. Master, Guild War World Champion. What a dude.
He is an absolute legend.
I hope he spends a bit of time over Christmas reflecting on his life choices and where they've led him.
Yeah, and under the legal limit of alcohol too, I think. That might be nice.
So I guess, you know, Merry Christmas to everybody, or, you know, if you're not of that bent, whatever holiday greeting you want to throw in there. But stay safe, absolutely. Stay happy, don't drink and drive.
Absolutely, and we'll see you all in the new year.
Indeed. Next stop, CanCon.
Freaking bear.